The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning to you. Just about to turn 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 26th of January, and you're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. And we've lots coming up for you over the next 3 hours. We want you to get involved in the conversation. Don't forget, you can text the programme, give us a call. Caroline taking your calls, or indeed you can email the show. And also, if you want to watch the programme and most of our guests, hop on to our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, and watch us there on your smart TV, your tablet, your Fire Stick, whichever. The same applies across our Facebook pages and on our website, highlandradio.com. Right, it is Thursday, so loads of papers out this morning. Let's have a look at what's making the headlines. Let's start with the Donegal News and a consultancy firm hired to facilitate workshops between Sealta management and staff at Letterkenny University Hospital was paid more than €400,000 for its services. Ernst & Young spent 5 months last year working on the project in a bid to improve communication channels between the two bodies. For every week it spent working on the issue, the London headquartered firm received almost €20,000. Ernst & Young was brought in following the publication of a damning report by HICWA, which found weaknesses in oversight arrangements and government structures at the hospital. A big bill there, isn't it? On to the Tyrconnell Tribune this morning. Water staff fear jobs with the council. With Éisc Éireann taking control of water services from the start of January, ground staff with Donegal County Council have expressed fears that their future roles are uncertain if they do not sign up to the new deal. The government's stated ambition is that local authorities will no longer have staff working in water services beyond the end of 26. Up to 3,000 staff who work in water services are set to transfer to Éisc Éireann before the end of 2026. If they decide to remain working for the local authority, many believe they will not be a placement for them. On to the Donegal Democrat now. Their headline, growing demand for NowDoc services. NowDoc face-to-face appointments in South Donegal over Christmas and the New Year rose by more than four times compared to the same period the previous year. The out-of-hours doctor service, which was under severe pressure due to flu and the re-emergence of COVID-19 and RSV, a lot of us were there with RSV, saw the number of calls it received at its centres in South Donegal increase from 723 in the Christmas and New Year of 2021-2022 to 846 over the last Christmas. That's a rise of 17%. The number of face-to-face appointments with patients at the NowDoc Centre at Mount Charles and the Satellite Centre that serves Ballyshannon and Bundoran increased from 104 to 450. And there's a lot of uncertainty and confusion and concern over the future of NowDoc services. We will be speaking to someone in the know from NowDoc about that shortly, just trying to get an idea of where they are currently and where they want to go. So stay tuned for that if you've an interest in those services. The Derry News this morning, local politicians accepting crumbs from the table. Local politicians have been accused of seeming quite happy to accept some crumbs from the table of the North's Belfast-centric economic policy. The stinging criticism came from Creggan community worker Conal McFeely. It followed last week's revelation no dairy projects received second-round British government levelling up funding, even though a number submitted applications. Speaking to the Derry News, Mr McFeely said the Belfast-centric status quo needed to be challenged. Let's have a look at the Irish Farmers Journal this morning. Bought beer to ratchet up farm audits. Farmers are facing significantly more onerous farm audits from 2024 onwards as Bought beer overhauls its quality assurance schemes. The new animal welfare checks are to be carried out during audits where cattle will be inspected on farm for phytinous, coat conditions and behaviour. A new digital sustainability platform developed with Chagask and the ICBF will see farmers have to draw up a sustainability action plan every 18 months, listing measures they can take to reduce emissions. And even just the terminology and words around farming nowadays are tough to pronounce and to understand. Let's have a look at the national newspapers now. The Irish Times this morning tells us that Sinn Féin admits failing to declare expenses for 2016 election. I suppose if you're going to make a big deal of an issue, you have to make sure you're not standing within a glass house chucking your stones outwards. Well, Sinn Féin has said it failed to disclose expenses worth more than €2,000 for six events it held during the 2016 general election campaign. The party said it conducted an examination yesterday of its election expenses statement to the Standards in Public Office Committee and found that it failed to include payments it made to five separate venues during the course of the campaign. There was a 360 payment to the Westin Hotel, 397 odd to Wynn's Hotel, a total of 600 paid to the Royal Irish Academy for two events, a payment of 250 to the Gresham Hotel and a payment of €553 to the National Gallery. The total amounted to €2,160.70. All but two of the invoices were paid at the time, but the details were not furnished by Sinn Féin to SIPO as required under the 1997 Electoral Act. A spokesman for the party said Sinn Féin had held 23 press events during the 2016 general election campaign and that only six of those were held at indoor venues. And now that party must decide today if it is to put forward a motion of no confidence in Pascal Donoghue. We'll see. I'm not sure what will be achieved by that. Anyway, the Irish Independent Agriculture Minister, Charlie McConlogue, has confirmed that the deal is done between Kiltshire and Gresham House on the formation of a controversial €200 million forestry fund that will allow international private investors to enter the Irish forestry market. And as you would know, there's been a lot of upset over that deal. It is a done deal, even though Kiltshire is semi-state. There's nothing seemingly the government can do about it if they wished. Well, addressing the Joint Directors Committee, the Agricultural Committee, that is, he also confirmed that since January 1st, no scheme is available for a farmer to submit a new application for afforestation or ash dieback tree disease support unless a previous licence was granted by December 31st, 2022. Let us go now to the Irish Daily Mail. And new legislation aimed at limiting short-term lettings could have a devastating impact on rural and coastal areas, TDs and senators fear. Yesterday, members of the Oireachtas Tourism Committee met with government representatives and officials from Fáilte, Ireland, to discuss the general scheme of the registration of short-term tourist letting bill 2022. Now, originally, I thought the whole idea was is that they would crack down on Airbnb in rent pressure zones. So, in other words, where there is issues in terms of very serious issues in terms of acquiring housing, that they would crack down on it there. But I think up until December, it wasn't right across the board. Now, I think maybe you could argue that there are rent pressure zones absolutely everywhere now. But anyway, be that as it may, I think Airbnb has been quite important in certain areas in terms of meeting the needs of tourists, particularly as quite a few hotels are otherwise occupied. Well, this bill aims to establish a register of short-term letting properties to be managed by Fáilte Ireland, which will require owners to get planning permission for change of use. Under the proposed laws, companies such as Airbnb would only be allowed to advertise properties that are registered with Fáilte Ireland. Fáilte Ireland estimates there are 30,000 short-term letting properties being advertised online, and it says the move could force up to an estimated 12,000 short-term lets out of the market and into the long-term rental market, which presumably is what the government is trying to achieve. But they believe there'll be a bit of a pushback by in rural areas against TDs. On to the Irish Daily Mirror. What do you think about this? Those who intimidate families of politicians by picketing outside their homes could be jailed for 6 months or more. It means that those that organise protests at a politician's gate can be sent to prison if a repeat offender. The new bill, which will be introduced into the Shannon by Fianna Fáil Senator Malcolm Byrne today, will not be opposed by any of the government parties, a decision that was taken by ministers at Cabinet on Tuesday. The bill will seek to crack down on the frightening protests that are becoming increasingly common outside places where private people such as politicians or asylum seekers live. Mr. Byrne's bill comes as politicians face increasing harassment, with women in particular subjected to some vile abuse just for doing their job. jobs. And it also comes as innocent Ukrainians and other asylum seekers are seeing disturbing protests outside the reception centres they have been sent to after already escaping horrific ordeals in the home countries. Now, I think there is two separate things going on here. I mean, I think there's probably a strong argument that could be made for limiting protests outside private residences. You know, there's people who are not politicians in those premises. There's younger children and what have you. The same you could say, of course, of places that house asylum seekers, but they are public spaces, really. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are genuinely upset for different reasons, and you start banning people protesting for those reasons. As I say, I can see the argument outside of a private house, but then as I discuss it, to a great extent, I suppose, reception centres are private houses for the people living in it. As I say, I don't know what the solution to that situation is. Lastly, in The Sun today, more families are turning to charities for financial help than in any year since the 2008 crash due to the cost of living crisis. It comes as Taoiseach Leo Varadkar confessed some of the current supports will end after February as Ireland can't afford to keep them all going. Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald told The Dáil yesterday that charities are receiving record numbers of calls for help from struggling families. And on this programme this week we heard that you know, we're seeing an increased number of students and their families seeking help from the likes of St Vincent de Paul. Also just across the page, just 4% of children in parts of Donegal had a COVID jab compared to more than 50% in an affluent suburb of Dublin. New figures compare the COVID-19 vaccine uptake across Ireland by local electoral area, and the CSO stats show the completion rate for a primary course of the jab among 5 to 11-year-olds ranged from 4% in Buncrana in Donegal to 55% in Stillorgan in Dublin. The rate for boosters was also lowest in Buncrana at 37% compared to a 76% uptake in Dublin's Rathaunham Templeogue. The lowest booster two rates were all in Dublin. The report also found the vast majority of workers, 85%, got at least the primary course of vaccination. All right, that's a run through. What's making the newspapers this morning? And a reminder of the numbers, if you want to text or WhatsApp the show, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We're joined on the programme now by Dr. Martin Coyne, clinical lead with NowDoc and a GP as well, of course. Good morning to you, Martin. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine, Greg. Thank you.
Lovely stuff. Good to have you with us. So I suppose before we talk about what may be to come, how is NowDoc currently set up? In other words, who's, you know, what's CareDoc's current role? And in terms of, you know, what services are currently available for people out there?
So CareDoc's role is to employ the doctors, supply the doctors. The doctors in NowDoc who work in NowDoc, their rotas are set through CareDoc. Their remuneration is set through CareDoc. Organisation of their locums, organisation of all slots in the and the decisions on the demand for the number of doctors on are all made through CareDoc. NowDoc as such runs the management end, if you like, starting from the telephone triage to nurse triage, to the drivers, to the backroom staff. That is all run through NowDoc as such. So although the doctors used to be with NowDoc, we had great difficulties managing the rota. You can imagine lots and lots of different personalities, lots of different parts of the county with different commitments to the rota. It was very difficult to run that. And it took a lot of time for a small number of doctors who frankly got tired of it. So we brought CareDoc in to manage that aspect of it about 10 years ago with great improvements. And from our point of view, we're very happy with the way CareDoc are running that for us.
Now, in terms of what's available across the county, in terms of, you know, physical premises where people can call in and cover, what's the current makeup of that around right across Donegal?
Okay, so you have centres in the south of the county in Mount Charles, and that covers Donegal Town, southwest Donegal, and down as far as Bundoran. You've centres in Derrybeg, which covers the west of the county. You've the Inishowen Centre in Carndonagh, and lastly, you've the centre in Letterkenny.
Okay, and in terms of the centre in Letterkenny, staff were informed and of course they were concerned, so they shared the information. They were informed that there are plans to move the hub from Letterkenny. And of course, then people might say, well, this is all very coincidental with, you know, a review by CareDoc underway. So just in the interests of absolute transparency, what is the situation as it relates to the moving of that hub and its timing?
So I think there's two separate things going on here. First of all, the proposal was made by the HSE to move the treatment centre from Old Town up to the hub across the road from the hospital. This would be a purpose-built renovation of the hub for us. We feel it would be, first of all, a better location for patients. Parking will be easier. Closer to the hospital for the small number of patients that we pass on to the hospital. Purpose-built for us as doctors, so we think it'll be an improvement and therefore an improvement for our patients. So I think that's a completely different aspect to what's going on, the ongoing review. Mm. And what the review is about is trying to improve the service. Deficiencies have been highlighted over the past while. Clinical governance, you can imagine, is not ideal. Clinical governance really starts with the first phone call to a call handler and passes through the call handler to the nurse, and then decisions are made in what treatment is most appropriate for the patient, and then on to the doctor. Where there is a gap in that clinical governance is that there are two management structures, CareDoc managing the doctors and NowDoc managing the nurse triage and the call handlers. And we found difficulties bridging that gap, especially when it came to adverse incidents. So we're addressing this from a safety point of view, a patient safety point of view.
Can you give us an example of that? That gap there. What the potential complications are, or the consequences of that are?
Okay, so you might have an adverse event, and we would like to, as CareDoc, as the doctors in the service, we'd like to access all the information. That would include recordings of the initial contact with the service, the nurse triage, and under GDPR rules, we're not entitled to listen to those recordings. So that to us is a glaring gap and something that we feel is unsafe going on.
Right, okay. So if CareDoc were in control of the initial calls, then that would be one problem eliminated.
We would see it. Now, these are proposals, of course, these are negotiations. That would be our view, and obviously people would disagree with that view, Greg. And you know that's what negotiations are about.
Yeah. All right. So what is being looked at as part of this review? Then obviously it's about from one perspective bridging some of these gaps, improving the service, and we'll get to maybe what other people feel it means. But like, what is on the table in terms of how the service might change, for instance, if you know those within CareDoc were listened to, in other words, what they believe is best for the county. So what might change? What would we see differently in terms of how the service is provided?
I think from a patient perspective, there shouldn't be any change. In fact, there's the only change that should be there, Greg, is an improvement. You know, a service that can respond to sudden increases. For example, in the 14 days over Christmas, the service increased 50% increase on the same time last year due to like a quadruple whammy, if you like, increase in COVID, flu, a very active flu season, RSV virus in kids who hadn't been exposed to it in the past, and strep A. People were very concerned about the media, or sorry, not the media, but the information that was coming out in the media.
No, it was part of it, in fairness, it was somewhat amplified by the media. I will accept that.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not blaming you, Greg.
No,
people were genuinely very, very frightened of strep A. Now, from a GP point of view, we didn't find that. So we were absolutely stunned, and we feel that in a situation where if CareDoc were in charge, we could respond easier to that. We could increase numbers easier. Like from the CareDoc point of view, in NowDoc, we increased our doctors. We were putting on extra doctors on shifts very, very easily. Now, it took some arm wrestling and some twisting to get people to respond to that. But the problem and delays in outlook, from our perception, was not actually at the doctor level. It was difficulties of calls getting through as far as the doctor's desk because there was great delays in triage.
Now, doc staff aren't going to be happy with that comment.
It's on the record, Greg. I'm not saying anything controversial here. They had huge volumes and they had difficulty dealing with those volumes of calls. But we feel that in a more streamlined service, we could deal with that in a much more reactionary way.
Do you envisage that the hubs will remain as they are now post-review if the service is changed?
I would stress that what we're looking at is improving the service. So closing hubs down would not be my view of improving the service.
It would be operated then in the same way whereby there's a mixture of people calling to a hub or in some cases a GP having to call out to someone's house or wherever they might be.
The GPs are very, very keen that the practice remains the same. We can't have a situation where we're closing our premises at 6 o'clock in an evening and finding that the service that is being offered is not as it is at the moment. That will just backfire on us. So if anything, we want to see an improved service. We want to see a more efficient service. We want to see less delays for patients. And, you know, you can't have doctors being sitting in surgery where patients have been waiting for 6 or 7 hours to have a call back and then coming in and taking it out on the doctor. You know, that just makes for a bad day for everybody concerned. So we don't want to see anything being downgraded. We want to see a better service.
And it would operate at the same hours as currently, at least, expanded?
There's no plans at all. I can't see how you change that, Greg.
In terms of then call handling, you're talking about, you know, some examples of people waiting a long time for a call back. If CareDoc were to take over that element of this service, what are the targets? What are the average waiting times? What are the average callback times? How, comparing this county to others, how would the service change in that regard?
The actual callback times for all co-ops are national. Urgent calls should be answered within minutes, other than 999 calls, which should be directed to the appropriate service. Non-urgent calls should really be dealt with in, you know, a period of 60 minutes. I can't give you the exact figures on that, Greg, so I don't want to be shot down on that. But, we want to get to those targets, which NowDoc have been able to achieve for large majorities of the time, but during peak times, we've been falling far short.
And I'm just throwing out what some of the criticisms out there have been. Some would say now that it might be too money motivated, that people might find it more difficult to actually see a doctor. Maybe if they're a medical card holder, I don't know, that this could in turn put more pressure on GPs on a Monday, Tuesday morning or Wednesday morning, dependent on what the cover being provided by NowDoc was. And that more people might be sent to the ED rather than being seen. As I say, it's not an argument I'm advancing. I'm just saying this is some of the criticism that's out there.
So CareDoc is a not-for-profit organization, first of all. So any profits that are made are put back into the service for supporting GPs, giving me, for example, I'm guaranteed that I don't do more than 120 hours out of hours in a year. And that's fine with me because I'm working, 50 hours a week anyway. And there are very few GPs who aren't doing that. So the money end of things, we're not for profit. We're not for taking large amounts of money. In fact, out of hours costs me money, Greg. I put in €700 every month into NowDoc so that I don't have to work red eye shifts. And that's for every principal GP in the county. So if we come out of NowDoc on a budget neutral basis as individual GPs, we're doing well. So no GP is looking to make vast profits out of hours care because it's just not there. Medical card holders are guaranteed their service. Private patients pay a private fee when they come in. And, I would point out that the vast majority of GPs, now we can't fix prices in NowDoc because GPs are individual operators, but the vast number of GPs who see private patients in out of hours charge the same fee that they charge at 9 o'clock in the morning if they see somebody at 3 o'clock in the morning. So there's no gouging going on. There's nobody's looking to get rich out of ours.
Some are saying that, you know, that if calls are answered in Carlow, for example, triage down there, that there would be a loss of sort of local knowledge and in terms of how the service currently responds, that it would be detrimental to that.
Yeah. I say two things to that. First of all, the decision on where calls are going to be handled hasn't actually been made. That's part of the negotiation. Now, whether a hybrid model might be suggested, I don't know. Perhaps nurse triage being done in Donegal on behalf of CareDoc, that's a possibility. But I would point out that there are large swathes of the country where triage is actually done from Carlow. Pretty much all of the East Coast, Sligo, Leitrim. Nobody is jumping up and down in Sligo, Leitrim talking about their pure CareDoc model. It seems to be working very, very well for them. So if you're in Sligo, Leitrim, North Leitrim, your calls have been triaged in Carlow as well. So I get that. I understand how people might feel that about the calls coming from the more rural areas of Donegal and the lack of knowledge. Perhaps people can be told inappropriately which centre that they should attend. But with air codes now, you know, everybody knows exactly where everybody is.
What about the staff that currently work for NowDoc?
My understanding, Greg, and I would point out, I am not management. My understanding is that all staff have been spoken to about any proposals. Nobody's going to lose their job. There may be some redeployment. But there is no talk, as far as I'm aware, of redundancies. Well, in fact, I'm very aware that there was no talk of redundancies. But staff have been offered redeployment in whatever model is chosen in the end.
So currently people working in NowDoc would be offered roles within CareDoc if there was an overlap of that role. And then obviously the HSE then, it's already been committed, they'd be the rest of the staff would be offered alternative roles within the executive?
Again, not my area of expertise, Greg, but that is my understanding of what is going on in negotiations. Negotiations that I'm not actually part of.
Yeah, I understand, but you have an insight that we haven't had access to before, so that's very much appreciated. Do you understand the public's concern? I mean, do you think maybe an interview like this would have been more helpful? I'm not saying this is anything on you, whomever would be responsible in CareDoc. Do you think an interview like this in advance of negotiations would have been helpful so that people would perhaps have a better understanding of the process? Because it was never going to be kept private. It was always going to be come out into the public. But there's been a lot of anxieties. Like, we got an email from an 86-year-old yesterday who's up to high dough as to what this might mean for them. Do you know, I just wonder sometimes if these conversations were had in advance, it might be helpful to the process. I don't know if you've a view on that.
It would have been impossible to have this conversation 5-6 weeks ago, Greg, because CareDoc were not talking to the HSC. CareDoc were trying to have these discussions, but no meetings had taken place. But those meetings have now taken place. As you said, the ball is now rolling. Staff have been spoken to, so you are getting calls about concerns. But I would stress the purpose of all of this is to make it a better service. So your 86-year-old email caller, I would reassure that we are not, the doctors are not going to stand over a reduction in service. And you can bring me on and give out to me in a year's time if you perceive that's what happened, Greg. But that is not what we have in mind. We want to improve the service, make it more streamlined, less waiting time for patients, patients pointed in the most appropriate directions for their treatment.
Okay. Listen, thanks for your time this morning. I do appreciate it. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Greg.
All right. All right. Bye-bye. That's Dr. Martin Coyne, clinical lead with NowDoc and GP. Now, a lot has been discussed about the potential changes over the last number of weeks. So I wanted to give Dr. Coyne an opportunity to put the perspective across that he believes that it would be beneficial, and in fact that GPs wouldn't accept anything other than that. But that's the information. It's up to you now to do with it what you will. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
Okay, you're welcome back to the programme. On to it now, we welcome Fionnán Sheehan, Irish Ireland editor of the Irish Independent. Good morning. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, Fionnán, the paper has been looking into, I suppose, everyone's talking about election expenses and declarations and what have you at the moment, and you've been looking into Sinn Féin's record in this regard in recent elections. What's been uncovered or found?
Yeah, so what emerged last week was that 2 years ago, Sinn Féin was told that there was an issue with their election 2020 statement, that they hadn't included the cost of an opinion poll that the party had commissioned on that occasion. So this was on foot of a press query, and Sinn Féin submitted an amendment to their statutorily obliged election statement at that time. Now, subsequently, we've been looking at the previous general election, and under the same heading of costs related to the media, press events, and publicity, we found it curious that there was nothing at all declared by Sinn Féin in terms of any press conferences, any launches that they held in 2016, despite these being events that took place, that our own colleagues attended. They were predominantly in hotels and cultural venues in Dublin city centre. So we asked Sinn Féin, why were none of these events declared? We sent them on their own photos from their own social media accounts that they had taken at these events, and said these events happened in locations where you normally have to pay to host an event. Why was there no costs associated with that? We got no reply. We then went back to Sinn Féin the following day, saying one of the cultural institutions, it's an academic institution in Dublin city centre, the Royal Irish Academy, where they held their two biggest events, they said that they didn't provide the venue for free. In fact, they had invoiced Sinn Féin, but that the bill was never paid. So we asked Sinn Féin, well, the reason you don't seem to have declared it as an expense is because you didn't pay the bill. Why did you not pay the bill? Again, we got no reply. They issued a statement to RTE yesterday saying that this was an oversight and that they'd found one other invoice. We then sent Sinn Féin a list of other venues that they had held events at during the 2016 general election, which we had attended, which they had publicised, which they themselves had again taken photos of: the Gresham Hotel, the Westin Hotel, the National Gallery, Wynn's Hotel, all high profile Dublin city centre locations. And the party eventually came back last night and said not only had they failed to pay a bill in 2016 to the Royal Irish Academy and declared an expense there, but they hadn't actually declared an expense for any of these locations either in their official legally obliged declarations to the state ethics watchdog. So Sinn Féin are now amending that statement. It follows the amendment of the 2020 one, but it does kind of raise questions about, like, how exactly do you forget to declare expenses for events that were central to your campaign?
And where does this rank in the scale, if one exists? Because obviously Sinn Féin see blood in the water with Pascal Donoghue. I believe they're still mulling over today whether or not to put down a motion of no confidence in him. Like, is there a hierarchy of forgetfulness here, or mistakes that can be made? Like, where does this rank in terms of the challenges they're putting towards Pascal Donoghue, for example?
I suppose the issue that arises is that they're saying that your election expenses have to be correctly filed, that it's vitally important that this is the law. There are ethics regulations, guidelines and legislation in place, and that you have to adequately respond to those. And the accusation against Pascal Donoghue is quite clear. But for the 2016 general election and the 2020 general election, he did not declare expenses, the cost of which were covered by a businessman. Now, there's also an additional problem that Pascal Donoghue has,
in that a corporate donation was not declared and was accepted over the limit by Fine Gael. So Sinn Féin are basically saying your house must be in order, but when you look at their own accounts, you find that it's not really that hard to find that they themselves have anomalies. You also raised the question, they were told 2 years ago there was a problem with 2020. Why did they not go back and look at those accounts and the previous election accounts and see, is there anything else that isn't in order here? It wasn't difficult to establish that Sinn Féin held 6 events attended by the party leadership, which they themselves publicised and then didn't declare any expenses for at all. That's not really rocket science. If you compare it to, again, the 2020 general election, they went from the Royal Irish Academy, which is an old, austere building on Dawson Street in the middle of Dublin. They went to the building next door, the Mansion House, in 2020 and held a similar launch there, and that cost $7,000. They had to declare costs for the venue. There are costs included for sound engineering and so on. And yet you're looking at their expenses for the election just previous to that and nothing pops up. So it doesn't seem that there's been an awful lot of oversights going on here.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, people might say, well, in Pascal Donoghue's case, it has to be looked at further. Of course, that, you know, people who made donations then went on to be appointed to certain bodies and what have you.
Well, he's in very serious difficulty here. That a complaint has been made to the State Ethics Watchdog. He is effectively admitting guilt on the non-declaration of election expenses and also on that issue around the corporate donation. And a detailed investigation will, one expects, have to be carried out into his election expenses in 2016 and 2020. And these laws are in place for a good reason. They were put in place 25 years ago on foot of a series of political scandals and the damage that did to the reputation of the political system and the governance of the country to society as a whole. That's why these laws were put in place.
And yet here
we are candidates and parties.
And yet here we are again in the mouth of more controversy. So in terms of this SIPO and how it's operated, all being looked at, streamlined, how long is it going to be, do you think, before we see changes in that regard finally, Fionnán?
Difficult to say. I mean, we were told that last year there was an ethics law review being carried out. We never saw the results of that. That was passed on then to Pascal Dunne, who took over as Public Expenditure and Reform Minister. He's now had to recuse himself from that process because he has a direct conflict now, because he himself is being investigated. That's gone to Michael McGrath, the Finance Minister, who was originally carrying out the review. One would hope it would be in place by the end of this year, because next year we've got a busy agenda. We definitely have the local and European elections taking place in May of 2024. We quite possibly have a referendum this year or next year. We also are expecting an election for a directly elected mayor of Limerick. And then the biggie, the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, is saying that he wants to have the next general election in autumn of 2024. So that's only 18 months away or thereabouts. Micheál Martin saying he'd prefer a few months later in the new year in 2025. So they only really have 18 months to review the legislation, put forward proposals, pass that through the Oireachtas, because it will need legislation to underpin it, and then ensure that the adequate body independent body is in place to enforce these regulations all in time for those elections next year.
All right, busy calendar ahead. All right, Fionnán, thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it. Fionnán Sheehan, Ireland editor of the Irish Independent there. Tomas, Sean Devine is a defective concrete block campaigner, defective concrete products campaigner. He joins us on the program now. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, okay. So what is being organised and what's being asked of Donegal's county councillors?
Greg, I've decided that they ask thousands of people to go back to Dublin again. We decided that it's not really fair, but we have 37 local representatives elected to Donegal County Council by the people, and it's time those 37 councillors attended Dublin on our behalf, and our councillor mayor, Liam Blaney, demand a meeting with Daryl Bain to tell him that the people of Donegal is taking the more crumbs from the table, and it's just got out of hand. You know,
The announcement last week for that. Sorry, beg your pardon. Go ahead, Thomas.
The announcement last week, rightly so, for the people in Leinster and Dublin, that to get their homes 100% fixed in the space within a year, from been announced, and they're fighting for mega campaign up here his last 10, 12 years, and it's fight after fight, and it's just not, it's not fair, it's not happening. I've been in homes there recently with glowing men and women crying right out, and their homes readily fall around them. They have nowhere to go, they have nowhere to put a caravan, they have nothing, and if they qualify for the 15,000 or 20,000 they get, the rent is last wild, and this county is shocking. From €1,250 a month to €1,750 a month for a three-bedroom house, their 15,000 and 20,000 won't last them 6 or 7 weeks. They're gone, finished. What do they do then? They can't pay a mortgage and they can't pay that for lots more rent. So we need modular homes and places here in Donegal for these people to move into urgently. I've been in pensioners' homes, I've been in people's homes that have disabilities and they have nothing. You know, where does it end, Greg?
And the modular homes makes a great deal of sense, I think, to most people, because it's not like everybody in an affected home would need one of these. You know, the scheme will fix some houses at a time, so theoretically some families could move in and move out and others move in and move out. It feels like a no-brainer to me, especially considering we are erecting these modular homes elsewhere. In terms of the replies, looking down the list, Independence, Sinn Féin, Martin Farron, the sole Labour Party rep, he's there as well, a couple of Fine Gael representatives. So there will be government councillors, if they don't mind me calling them that, on this bus.
Yes, we have two Fine Gael so far, and thank you very much for them putting their name forward to attend. We have no contact whatsoever from anybody on Fianna Fáil, which maybe is not surprising, but I honestly thought that they would, because some of these lazy Fianna Fáil councillors have made it in their homes, and I thought they need to try every effort. Greg, without being disrespectful to anybody, I listened to Charlie McConnell Logan, your show last week, and for a government minister, Greg, you know, it's disheartening that man was supposed to be representing people from Donegal, and anybody I've been talking to, and I've been talking to people in Fianna Fáil last week, they're that disappointed in the party and Charlie McConnell Logan, that the next step action we're going after us is we're calling for him to resign with a mass petition. He's no longer representing the vast majority of people in Donegal.
But he is of the opinion that principally the scheme for primarily Dublin people is the same as the defective concrete scheme. That's the point he was keen to make, that in principle they're the same, and he secured some retrospective payments for those affected by defective concrete here in Donegal. You don't feel that goes far enough then?
No, Greg, it doesn't, because I live in a development just down the road below your radio station, and there's a few apartments on it. And listen to Charlie's waffle last Friday, saying that the apartments in my development will be 100% fixed, which, brilliant, if that is true, which I doubt very much, I don't think it is true. And the house next door to those apartments won't be 100% fixed. They'd have to find more money to fix their own home than the ones living next door, which is totally unfair to anybody. Whether the home cost 1,000 to fix or cost 1,000,000 to fix, 100% redress is 100% redress. It's not 90-10, 60-10, 40-10, anything at all. That homeowner bought that home or built that home on the intention and good faith. The government failed them. The manufacturer of the blocks failed them. And why should that person have to be out? Thousands of euros to fix that home.
Well, over half, 14 councillors already have said they're going down on the 8th of February. What are they going to do? Is it up to them to try and secure? Go ahead.
They asked them to stand outside Dáil Éireann, to protest on our behalf and demand a meeting with Darrell Breen to tell them that they're taking no more. The 37 reps in Donegal County Council are demanding to be treated equally as the other counties in Ireland. It is not fair that we constantly seem to just get the scripts that's left over on a table in Dublin sent up here to Donegal. And our Fianna Fáil reps and Donegal reps and Donegal County Council need to tell their paymasters, their bosses, that this is not happening anymore.
All right. Thomas, thanks very much for your time this morning. That's Thomas Sean Devine there. As I say, 13, 14 councillors have already confirmed they're attending. I mean, Fianna Fáil councillors are in a potentially a difficult position, of course, because their boss in the county is Minister Charlie McConnell-Logue. And I don't know, maybe they're waiting to make a decision. I don't know, but I can understand that it is a difficult position they find themselves in. But it's a very, very difficult position homeowners find themselves in too. Greg, please ask your guest, if someone is leaking confidential information from SIPO, like, I can't read that last bit because I just have to make sure it's not illegal for me to say that. I don't think so. A lot of this stuff is just journalists digging. There's a couple of guys working for The Ditch who've exposed quite a lot of this before, and I suppose then it's set up to the legacy media then to sort of start looking as well. So I don't think it's necessarily leaks coming from SIPO, though I can't rule that out. Dr. Coyne on radio, if this goes private, they have to say they have no say in the service. Also, CareDoc down the country have hours of delays, callbacks. My relatives live there. What about the service users who were in the hub prior to this? I don't really understand. They'd be displaced from there. He says it's going to be purposely built and designed, so maybe there's extra accommodation there. Right, we'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after the news and obituary notices. Stay right where you are.